Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, this is Carlos Marti from Puerto Rico, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, thanks very much, Carlos, in Puerto Rico, for your lovely, lovely intro there. It is 2:15 in the morning in Melbourne. Less than an hour ago, Matt and I were in the post-match press conference of Daniil Medvedev. Just over an hour ago, we were in the post-match press conference of Felix Auger-Aliassime. Less than an hour before that, Daniil Medvedev was on court doing his post-match victory interview with Jim Courier, telling him that when he was two sets to love and match point down, he asked himself, what would Novak do? And it was the answer to that that won him the match, and a whole load of boos from the Rod Laver Arena crowd. An hour before that, Daniil Medvedev was match point down to Felix Auger-Aliassime, and going all the way back about 15 years ago, Felix Auger-Aliassime led two sets to love over the very strong favourite for this men's Australian Open title. And we were all, I think Daniil Medvedev included, in a little bit of a state of shock, Matt.
Certainly at two sets to love to Felix Auger-Aliassime. I did not see that coming at all based on the past matches they've had, which have been pretty one-sided in Medvedev's favour, based on the form they've both shown this tournament. Felix had improved. He really had since I'd watched him in the first two matches, but I still didn't really think he would trouble Medvedev all that much. And I must say, I was blown away with the tennis Felix produced, in especially in those first two sets, but really for most of the match. I think it's the best I've seen him play. He was smoking the ball, wasn't he, the way he was hitting it, and there wasn't any suggestion that he was gonna start shanking in the early stages. He was reading Medvedev. He was serving fantastically well. Medvedev couldn't get close to his serve. He was acrobatic at times on the sort of leaping smashes. He had it all going on. It was the perfect performance for two sets. And I was really shocked by it. And Medvedev was as well. He couldn't find his game, by contrast. And he said after the first two sets that he had zero confidence, was the line he gave in press, because he wasn't playing well and Felix was.
Best I've seen Felix Auger-Aliassime play, David. We'll come on to why he ended up losing the match, and both he and Medvedev bear responsibility for that. But for an awful lot of that match, including the fourth and fifth sets, it was the best I've ever seen Felix Auger-Aliassime play.
Yeah. He was the player that I think we all thought we were going to get about 2.5 years ago when he first burst on the scene. He was the one we were all excited about. You could just see the ingredients of what we've seen as a sort of fully completed meal, if you like, tonight. And it was pretty much perfection for, as you say, for two sets. And even thereafter, I'm not particularly perturbed by the fact that he didn't win. I saw a different man, a different player tonight. I saw the player that I hoped we were going to get, and that I really worried that we weren't going to get the last year or so. The balance, the poise, the athleticism, the strike on both sides, the damage he can do with the forehand. But it was controlled aggression, and it was kind of all those sort of combination as of other players that we've talked about him potentially being one day. He's got the perfect physique, 6'4", sort of 1.93 meters, but broad shouldered, totally balanced. And yeah, I thought he was fantastic tonight. He didn't win. That's another discussion point, but still, I think that this is a massive step.
If you were new to tennis, if you were a freshly hatched chick in the tennis world, you knew nothing of any of the players or anything like that, but you understood sport and sort of athleticism, and you were asked, which one of these two players is the best in the world at the moment? You wouldn't vote for the daddy long legs flailing around up the other end of the court, looking frankly underpowered for lots of that match. I mean, he was underpowered. There's no question Felix Auger-Aliassime has far more power than Daniil Medvedev. I think Medvedev's ball is deceptive. He described in one of his press conferences a few days ago how he spent a lot of his training working on the ball not losing acceleration after the bounce, so it skids through. So while it might not be as quick in the air as a lot of other people's ball, there's something about the way it bounces through to the racket. So look, it's just a different style of play, but it looked like man against boy, and the man was, you know, the guy that hadn't won a Grand Slam and had never pulled off anything like he so nearly pulled off tonight. And in terms of regrets for Felix Auger-Aliassime, he did say he was pretty frank in press. Actually, he came quite quickly, not sort of a straightaway knee-jerk press conference. He looked like he'd had some time to sit alone, rocking back and forth in a state of despair in the locker room. But he was quite reflective, actually. He said, look, of course, there were things I would go back and change. But when asked, I think it was by Willy Weinbaum of ESPN, if there was one... It was Serge Fayat, the Belgian journalist in French, that asked him, if there was one regret that you have from the match, what would it be? And I expected him to deflect that question, because that's an awful lot of sort of quite specific processing about the match, which I thought maybe he hadn't had a chance to do that. And he gave a brilliant answer. He said, look, it's not the match point, because Medvedev took the racket out of my hand on the match point. He just served a bomb. He did what champions do from match point down. He just prayed three sublime points, sort of the foundation of which was his serve, which he found just when he needed it. But Felix Auger-Aliassime said his regret was the start of the fifth set, was losing serve at the start of the fifth set and actually squandering... Was it one break point he had on the Medvedev serve in the very first game of the first set? You know, Medvedev roars back from two sets to love down. He goes off court at the end of the fourth set, which is an interesting move. I mean, I think he just had to because his kit was so soaked through. It was, I think, his second or third kit change of the match. He was a sweaty, hot mess. But it was an interesting thing to do given how much the momentum was in his favour. And actually, it was Auger-Aliassime that had regrouped while Medvedev was off court, and he came out firing and he had chances to seize back the momentum, and that is the regret. And I think he's right for that to be the regret, actually.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Medvedev did take the racket out of his hand on the match point, so it's difficult to regret that. I never felt like Felix Auger-Aliassime started playing the wrong way or started doing the wrong thing. You know, I think, you know, it's an easy comparison to make, but to compare it to his fellow Canadian yesterday, who also lost in five sets, I thought there were times where Shapovalov just got it wrong, whereas I don't think Felix did. I think he just didn't quite execute when he should have done, when he needed to, perhaps at small moments, and the start of the fifth set was one of those. And Medvedev getting that break so early did slightly, for me, take the tension away from the fifth set. I always felt when he had that break like he was going to win it, like he was going to close it out. Obviously, Bielik got very close to breaking back right at the end, and there was some real drama there at the end. But just once Medvedev got ahead, it was always going to be very, very difficult for Auger Aliassime, I think. But just as you said, it feels like this is his first real big moment on the big stage. I mean, I know he's beaten Zverev at Wimbledon. That was a very, very good win. But, you know, it was Zverev on grass. That isn't the same as Medvedev in the quarterfinals of the Australian Open on a hard court. This was a level up, and he played really, really well today. And Hannah departed us on WhatsApp with a question of whether he has changed his tennis DNA or confirmed his tennis DNA. And I was really thinking about this when I went to walk to the tram, only to find out that we were too late for the tram and we ended up having to get official transport home. But I was sort of ruminating on this question, and I sort of came out with a bit of a get-out clause. If DNA has two strands,
oh God,
then I think he changed.
I don't like this.
I think he changed one strand, and that was the level. Like, I didn't think he had that level to go toe to toe with Medvedev. But we also saw the strand that has, I think, cost him in finals. When it gets tight, when it gets tense, does he necessarily find his game? That was the thing he said was different about Medvedev. When it matters, he played his best tennis, and Felix didn't quite.
See, I think that's great analysis, Matt. Podcast-worthy analysis, good stuff, but it's not an answer to Hannah's question.
I think it is.
You said the answer is both.
I genuinely think it is.
But I don't think DNA is about tennis level, is it?
Well, why not?
I think DNA is about who you are.
Well, part of who Felix is got to be having the level to... Because if you don't have the level, then, you know.
Let's hand this hospital pass over to the man that casually tells people they should change their DNA like it's nothing. David, confirmed or changed his DNA tonight, Felix Auger Aliassime?
I think we're in the process of it being changed, because I don't think that that result was down to him. I think it was wrestled from him in the end by somebody who is a stone-cold killer of a champion, and who, when his back was against the wall, when he was cornered, he came out swinging. He came out fighting. He tried to knock Felix's block off, frankly. And that's what I love about Medvedev. He just goes for it. He doesn't think twice. He doesn't consider the consequences. That's why he was, frankly, offering Stefanos Tsitsipas out for a fight when they had that row a few years ago. He doesn't worry about the consequences once he's in that situation. It's scary. He frightens me a bit. But as a champion with his back against the wall, that's what happened here, is he wrestled it off Auger Aliassime. And maybe Auger Aliassime will end up not having that in him to be able to withstand that in the next 10 years. We don't know for that for sure, but I think he showed enough tonight. He stayed with him long enough for me to think that he will get that last couple of percent in the future.
Every great champion has lost a match like this. Like, totally. And it's... I mean, he said it as well, didn't he? It's something you sort of just have to go through, I think. And
he was very impressive, the match.
Took
actually
it with a lot of grace, didn't he?
He did.
And analysis. And,
but was also thoughtful,
yeah,
I thought. And, you know, obviously gutted. But he did very well indeed, actually. And I still have concerns over the closing. I do. I think that record in finals is a problem. I think there was a hint of that tonight, that whatever it is that causes him to freeze a little bit in the big moments. But overall, I think it's progress. I think it's DNA progress. I definitely don't think he confirmed his DNA. I think he shifted a little bit.
Actually,
tonight,
just on the finals thing, I think his big goal now should be to use the next 5 months until the French Open to find a tournament to win. just find anyone, play any 250.
But then that's pulling the pressure on, isn't it? That's massively, you know, if the issue is the pressure and the tension, I think it might happen, you know, when he's least expecting it, although I'm not sure when that'll ever be because his expectations of himself are so high.
I mean, I think he should play plenty and lean
into it. Are you saying, David, he should go and play Newport, Rhode Island?
No, because that's too long away. Yeah.
Okay.
He needs to find Marseille or something like that.
With all due respect to all tournaments on the ATP calendar, we love them all. What tournament might you advise Félix Auger-Aliassime to enter?
Metz.
Okay. Right.
Is there anything before Indian Wells? Is there any American hardcourt tournament?
There's that Indian Wells Challenger, isn't
no,
there? The Kyle Edmund one.
He's won challenges.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's Acapulco.
Yeah, that's
but that's a 500. Acapulco gets a decent field. Yeah.
Maybe Dubai. That gets a good field. You know,
Metz it is. Off to Metz you go, Felix.
When's that? I don't even know when it is.
Imagine if he plays and doesn't win it now. That's.
Mind you, I think
we'll revisit the DNA question when he loses first round in Metz.
Metz might be in September for all I know. I can't remember.
anybody involved in the organisation of the Metz event, no offence intended.
We're not going to get a credential there, are
although
we?
Although probably lots received. What about Daniil Medvedev then? I mean, there's so much to say about him tonight. I've never seen him that... We've seen animation from him on the court. We've seen plenty of that. Agitation, frustration, you know, hijinks. But I've never quite seen that level of, like, real pumpedness that we saw from him tonight. It was like someone had ran a jolt of electricity through. I mean, it was nothing like what we were seeing from Félix Auger-Aliassime. It was like a more sort of gangly version of that.
Desperation.
He was right up against it. And I think there's a part of him that absolutely loved it. Obviously, he loved coming back and winning in that moment and everything as well. But I think there's a weird part of him that enjoyed being down and the challenge of that. I mean, I didn't get the first question in the press conference. It went to Chris Clary, and rightly so, but I was going to kick off with, I'm guessing you weren't bored tonight, Daniil, because of course that's what he was saying throughout his previous match against Maxime Cressy. And
yeah, I mean, it's his troll energy and troll character, isn't it? I mean, he was down, but he then just made life a nuisance for Auger-Aliassime. He took pleasure in the comeback. He took pleasure in extending the rallies and just making it difficult for Felix to finish it off. And he took great pleasure in whipping up the crowd. And yeah, I really think he did enjoy the sort of comeback and the way that match progressed. It did sort of suit his character quite a lot, I think.
Has he ever won two sets to love down before?
Yes, David. Yes. It's funny you should ask that, David.
There's no... Well, I mean, we could mention this without mentioning something else, but it was Marek Cilic on the night Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss came over for Curry.
Yes. Which we paid some attention to before switching over to the football.
Correct.
So what about Daniil Medvedev then? In terms of the troll element of him, he confessed, when I asked him about whether he was mimicking the very distinctive and unique grunt that Félix Auger-Aliassime has. And he said, with a glint in his eye, well, if I was, then I wasn't doing it on purpose, but that is a thing that I do.
Oh, wow.
He said, all of my friends kind of hate me for it, because if I spend any time with anybody, then I end up copying them and mimicking them. And so he said, I wasn't consciously doing it against Felix tonight, but maybe I did.
There was definitely a spell no question.
Oh, he was. And then I cheekily followed up with So what are you going to end up doing in two nights when you play Tsitsipas? And he didn't rise to it. He said, well, I won't be hitting one-handed backhands, that's for sure. I thought Great he might questions. Make a bullshit Russian joke, but alas, nobody was rising to the bullshit Russian bait today. We did try. I don't have to apologise to your mum anymore for swearing, David, because we now know she loves it.
Yeah, but sometimes my kids try to listen, and so, you know.
Well, they'll learn eventually.
They already know these words. That's the annoying thing.
Your son goes to football matches, David.
Yeah.
He wrote on the camera, not tired, another troll. He said after the match, didn't he, look, you know, we'll see tomorrow. He said, right now I feel okay, considering the amount of tennis I played, but tomorrow will be the acid test. Stefanos Tsitsipas, his semi-final opponent today, I mean, he was barely on court. Tsitsipas against Sinner, 6-3, 6-4, 6-2. It was less close, I think, than that scoreline suggests. I mean, it was a shock to the system, I think, for Jannik Sinner, who really thought he had a chance today. We all did. Everyone on pole vault did, anyway, because they were led astray by the tennis podcast.
Me and Matt both, we predicted he would win in four sets, Sinner. Matt and I did, and so I was very surprised, really taken aback.
Well, that's the best tennis that Tsitsipas has played on a hard court in a really long time, I think. It was breathtaking.
He was incredibly good today, and part of the reason I predicted him to lose was because I hadn't been that convinced by him this tournament. You know, he'd struggled, he'd lost sets. He did very, very well to come through against Taylor Fritz, but I didn't think it was anywhere close to his best tennis. And he flicked a switch today right from the start. From the word go, he was intense, he was focused, he was very clear in his thinking and what he was trying to do on the court. And against Fritz, he hit so many backhands. We commented on it, and lots of them were sliced backhands. And it felt like Fritz was getting the rallies he wanted. Well, today, Tsitsipas was getting the rallies he wanted. He was getting his forehand into play like I haven't seen him for a long, long time. And to do that, he just had to be so intense with his footwork. And he's a big Tsitsipas. He's a big presence on the court. And when he's like that, he smothers opponents. The way he covers the court is so impressive. And, yeah, I mean, he stood toe-to-toe with Sinner's power. It didn't seem to faze him at all. He put Sinner under pressure. He came forward. He moved brilliantly. Honestly, he looked unbelievably good today. I think certainly the best I've seen him play since the French Open last year. And obviously that was on clay, which I think is a surface which sort of accentuates the positives in his game even more. I was blown away with his level. It was the kind of level that makes you think, well, he's a slam champion in waiting, really. It was that good.
He was asked afterwards, David, was that the best match you've played all year? This was the first question, sort of the opening gambit from the moderator, just to get things get things up and running. He sort of balked and said, I think it's too early to say that.
Oh, thanks.
Completely misunderstood the question there, Stefanos. And then
it's,
I said,
it's a sign of things to come.
And then I sort of said, I tried to repackage that question, even though it was a perfectly good question, said, how much better is that? How much better do you feel after that than any of the other matches you've played this tournament? You know, how much better was that performance than the others this tournament? And he was pretty dismissive of that question as well. He sort of said, well, yeah, obviously my tennis speaks for itself. And look, he's right. His tennis did speak for itself today. He was brilliant, but I wanted his perspective on it. It's a weird vibe in his press conferences, isn't it? It's a weird old time. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll just let his tennis do the talking and not bring you Tsitsipas press conference news in future episodes. Yes. Unless he rises to Matt's bait about his relationship with Medvedev.
Oh, yeah. How did that go, Matt?
Not brilliantly.
Well, to be fair, David, no one's questions went brilliantly in that press conference.
No. The thing is, at the time, we didn't know who his semi-final opponent was going to be. And very often, journalists will just ask for a sort of comment on both players, you know, so they've got a quote on both of their players. And I totally understand why that happens, but I very rarely think that sort of elicits much of an answer because they don't know, so they're not going to go into much detail. So I just thought, okay, Tsitsipas has got history with Medvedev. He doesn't have history with Felix or Auger-Aliassime in quite the
Russian,
same way.
Bullshit Russian, bullshit Russian. We all were.
I can't deny.
If anybody hasn't followed that story, that was what Medvedev heard Tsitsipas say to him when they played in Miami qualifiers or years ago, wasn't it? And then that led to Medvedev telling him to shut your fuck up.
Shut your fuck up. Yeah. All-time iconic tennis quote.
Official number one of tennis podcast aggro, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then asking him for a fight on the court. So that's the history that Matt... And it, I mean, that is no exaggeration. That is exactly what happened. And we play it over and over again whenever we're bored, really. So we know it very, very well. Yes, didn't sound like he was too happy to engage in the conversation, Matt.
Well, so I said, what is your relationship like now with Medvedev? And also, what's the challenge of playing him on a hard court? You know, he lost to Medvedev in the Australian Open semi-final last year. And he said, why specifically Medvedev?
He knows why.
Yeah. So I said, well, because Medvedev's the favourite for that match against Felix Auger-Aliassime. Got away with that one, didn't I? And Tsitsipas said, well, what did he say? The relationship's okay.
He said it improved after the Labour Cup,
but we haven't spoken for 2 months. Honestly, the way he said it was telling in itself. I mean, their matches have not, unfortunately, elicited much aggro, actually, recently. But I really don't think they like each other. And I don't think it would take much for bullshit Russian energy to be reproduced. And I am hoping for it.
It sounded like the sort of situation to me where you think everything's fine with somebody and then sort of after a few weeks or months you realise you haven't heard from that person and then you check and you realise they've blocked you on all platforms. that's the vibe I got. But who knows? Who knows?
I can imagine what that is they really happen don't in that match. I can imagine that they really don't understand each other very, very well. Just approaches to life, they're so different, but I mean
they're different people.
Just going just very quickly on Tsitsipas, I was taken by how he just jumped on Sinner and he was dismissive of him. He was halfway between laughing at Sinner's power and using it against him, and I just wasn't expecting that. I was expecting Sinner to be able to dart away at him and cause him all sorts of trouble. And it was as though Tsitsipas had done a Berrettini against Alcaraz for the first two sets and just got offended by all these suggestions that this was going to happen and just went out there and took it personally and just decided to go and kill the guy. And I mean, and his ability to play offensively off the defense, when he's pushed out wide, when he's had a big shot hit at him, the way he just turns the table and hooks that forehand cross court and he still has enough spin on it to get it in no matter how hard he hits it, he is the most extraordinary athlete and I think that is underestimated in him at times, even though we think of him as a good athlete. He's an extraordinary athlete, really, is Tsitsipas.
And look, if it, you know, if on Friday it's Medvedev playing the tennis he played today and Tsitsipas playing the tennis he played today, then Tsitsipas wins. But
Tsitsipas has got to do it again.
Tennis doesn't work like that, and it's matchups, and it's bullshit Russian energy, and
yeah, there's no point in him trying to rally with the guy. He's got to swing.
I was just trying to help out Netflix with their storylines, quite frankly.
They're not filming Medvedev, though.
No, but they are filming Tsitsipas.
Yeah, I reckon Matt's going to be in on Netflix.
They'll get hold
but
of that presser.
You can't say it, or you'll sound like Tsitsipas. I'm definitely going to be in the finale of Drive to Survive. Quote.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Right then, what happened in the women's matches today? We have our full semi-final lineup. We know it is Barty Keys. That'll be the second of the two semi-finals tomorrow. And before it will be Iga Świątek against Danielle Collins. Two pretty different matches, these. Collins beating Elise Cornet 7-5, 6-1. First set was a contest, classic Elise Cornet, she just wouldn't go away. She came onto court somehow with even more strapping on her thighs than she had had in the previous round, at which point her thighs were extremely heavily strapped to the extent that I thought she was just wearing cycling shorts. But she added an extra layer to that strapping today. It was sort of mummification territory. And she really did give it some welly, but Collins' power, I think, told in the end. It was considering the conditions and some of the tennis that we've seen in these conditions over the last few days, it was really clean tennis from Danielle Collins today.
Really was. And actually, I think her game style suited the conditions better. I spoke the other day about neither Cornet nor Halep having a point-ending shot, and that just being so difficult in the heat because you have to take the scenic route to try and win rallies and points, and that just takes it out of you physically. Collins does have point-ending shots. I mean, lots of them. It could be her serve, it could be her forehand, it could be her backhand, it can be anything on return. She can just take over a point quite quickly with her power, and I think that helped her today. I think once she got through a really tight first set, as you said, where it sort of crackled, didn't it, right at the end, where Collins started yelling out, "Let's go!" And Cornet was giving it the alley, just sort of one after the other. It was what we hoped it would be for a brief moment of the sort of competing intensities. But once Collins came through that, she just had way more to give in the second set. And actually, that was something she really commented on, wasn't it, in her press conference, about how much stronger physically she is now. All the strength and conditioning work she's done. She said compared to her semi-final run here 3 years ago, if she had to sort of point to a difference in Collins, the tennis player. It's that she feels like she's more durable on court. Her energy, her power lasts longer, and in really tough conditions today, I think we saw that over Cornet.
She's consistently interesting in press, is Danielle Collins. There was no sort of killer line today. I just find her really engaging and interesting. She's a little bit different, I think. She spoke once again about the surgery that she had last year, and she had that surgery 7 weeks before the French Open. She said, "I had the surgery. I did 7 weeks of rehab, and then I played the French Open." And a couple of days ago, she told us that she came back far too quickly. She probably shouldn't have played that French Open, but she talked about how long it took to get the diagnosis of endometriosis. And while I don't think there's any bitterness in her, she definitely is aware of time lost in that period, and a feeling of what could have been. She did point out that she's still, pretty early in her tennis playing career. She's only been pro 4 years. She completed the full course, didn't she, of her athletic college scholarship, and she was the number one college player by the end of her degree. But she said she was not quite gaslit, but told that she was just a person with heavy periods, or told that this was just something she had to manage, etc. And goodness me, emotionally that must just be all a lot to deal with. And she's fascinating on it, and she said that she thought it'd be just generally a good thing if periods were talked about more openly, and sort of as a result researched more thoroughly as a factor in athletic conditioning and training methods and all the rest of it. It's an enormous thing that happens to 50% of athletes, certainly 50% of tennis players. And as always, sort of male is default, isn't it? So CC Caroline Criado Perez and her brilliant book Invisible Women, the male body is treated as default, and therefore research into those kinds of areas tends to be underfunded and under spotlighted, not a word, but it's late, folks. And she's just really interesting.
She's probably one of the most well-rounded human beings in tennis, I would say, because she's had a life that wasn't just tennis and being a prodigy. And she had it difficult at times, I think, in her upbringing. She had to really scrap in order to get her college tennis life, and she was very determined to get a qualification that wasn't just around tennis as well, and she's got a degree, and she blooming well fought her heart out for that, worked hard and made sure she got it because she wanted to make sure she had that as a backup, and that if tennis doesn't work out, doesn't matter, because I've got this. And I just feel like she's lived life beyond tennis, and that makes her that much more interesting and open when it comes to conversations like that.
Absolutely. And she was asked what was most satisfying for her about this achievement. Obviously, it's not her first Grand Slam semi-final. She's done it here before, but she said it made her think of her childhood and the sacrifices that her father in particular made in order for her to be able to play tennis. And she said the hours that he would spend on the road just taking her to competitions and practices. And she told a little story about how, she used to train before school, and one day he couldn't take her because he had a cold. And she said, "God, at least let me take me out for a run. Like, I need to do some kind of training." And she said he hopped on his bike while she ran alongside him just so she could, get some training in for the day. And it was a lovely little story. So Danielle Collins then through to a second Australian Open semi-final. She, of course, achieved it 3 years ago. She lost out to Petra Kvitova that day. She will face Iga Swiatek, who defeated Kaya Kanepi today in a marathon. 4:06, 7:06, 6:03, 3 hours and 1 minute. She wrote hashtag tired on the camera.
I think that's our tournament motto, isn't it? Thanks for the support, hashtag tired.
Yeah, exactly. It was an extraordinary match point. If you have the opportunity to watch match point, I highly recommend you do so. The clip of it is doing the rounds. It was just extraordinary defence into attack from Iga Świątek. It was a point that she had absolutely no right to win. And it kind of summed up the match, really, in lots of ways, and kind of summed up this whole run for her, because it's so different to her run to the title at the French Open in 2020, when she just blasted away all before her. She was sublime. It was 2 weeks of absolute perfection from Iga Świątek. And this run, whether it ends here or goes on, has been very far from that. It is, you know, it has been up and down. And, you know, that is a big part of the learning process for Świątek. And she talked about that today. She said, you play your best tennis a couple of times a year. I'm trying to be okay with not playing my best and winning anyway.
Yeah, because I think when you have a breakthrough, that's so often what people associate with you for a long time. And I think I probably was guilty of that. I was thinking, well, Świątek blasts her way through slams, you know, because we've seen it. She's capable of it. But that might be the best slam she ever plays in terms of level of tennis for a whole week. It's unrealistic to expect her to do that every time she plays a slam. And I think she's coming to terms with that as well. And as you said, she's figuring out the process of winning matches when she's not at her best. And she said she's been getting better at finding solutions on court. She's really taken a lot from the fact that she's won from a set down in the last two matches, something she hasn't got a brilliant record of doing on tour either, away from the slams of sort of figuring out matches when she's not playing well. So I think there's quite a lot of satisfaction to take. Obviously, you want to play your best, and it's brilliant when everything is going perfectly. But yeah, it's just not going to happen most of the time. So winning like this is absolutely vital. And look, she wasn't at her best today. 12 double faults, you know, in particular, she really struggled on serve. And she was very close to losing in straight sets. You know, Kanepi had her in a second set tiebreak. But just when she needed to, I thought she cut out some of the unforced errors. She started extending the point. She won a lot of the long rallies in the second set and in the third set as well. And yeah, it's a really great achievement to sort of fend off someone of Kanepi's power when you're not quite playing your best yourself. It was a real sort of mental challenge, I think, for Świątek out there. And yeah, she dealt with it really, really well.
That's seven Grand Slam quarterfinals for Kaya Kanepi without reaching a semi-final, which I think, to quote a Matt's stat from earlier or last year, was it? Would it have been around the time of Carlos Suarez Navarro's retirement, perhaps? That equals Carlos Suarez Navarro's record of most Grand Slam quarterfinals reached in the women's game anyway, without reaching a semi-final. But I'm not sure there are regrets for Kanepi, and I'm not sure, you know, I think overall, she's 36. She could very well continue to play for a long time, or certainly a time. But you know, Grand Slam quarterfinal is. I don't know what I'm trying to say, David. I'm trying to compliment Kanepi, and I'm worried it's going to come out as a sort of backhanded compliment. It's extraordinary her record at slams. Quite frankly, yeah, I really don't think she should focus on as much as I've just. Just talked about it, focus on the failure to reach a semi-final. She has been an extraordinary Grand Slam competitor for 15 years.
Yeah, and she's another Cornet, if you like, and yet she's done the quarterfinals several times, but she's done it over a really long period of time. I didn't realise she was 36. I mean, she's an incredible athlete. She's really so well conditioned and puts the work in and just has had horrible injuries in that time and just keeps on coming back for more. And I tend to dismiss her as the player who nobody wants to meet in the first couple of rounds, but doesn't do much when she's gone beyond that. But actually, that's a really consistent record of success several times, and she's had a career to be proud of no matter what happens from here.
Yeah, same. I'm guilty of thinking her as a kind of plot device rather than an actor or a character in her own right. And, you know, seven quarterfinals is absolutely nothing to be sniffed at. Incidentally, in just tennis being so completely tennis news, after Medvedev and Felix Auger-Aliassime finished their match, gone midnight, it was announced to the crowd that the mixed doubles semi-final between Hrdečka and Escobar and Furlis and Kubler would soon be coming onto court. Don't go anywhere, folks. I mean, everyone was literally going anywhere at that moment. And there was laughter when that was announced.
People were like, oh, goodness me, don't be silly, was the feel of the noise that was coming through my TV, because I heard that announcement and it is laughable. It's disrespectful, really, to that competition and to those players.
That's one of the biggest matches of those players' lives, and it started at 10-1 in the morning. And we don't know why it wasn't moved. Don't know. Anyway, should have been something. Yeah, you just can't have that happening. I know we're conditioned to sort of accept that tennis does do this to itself, but it really doesn't need to. Better news stories from today. Alfie Hewitt and Gordon Reid defeated Shingo Knida and Gustavo Fernandez 6-2, 4-6, 10-7 to win their third straight men's wheelchair doubles title and their ninth successive Grand Slam doubles title. Absurd. Absolutely wow. Absurd. And Alfie Hewitt is going for the double tomorrow. He's in the wheelchair singles final, where he'll also be taking on Shingo Knida. And he's just an incredible story. If he wins tomorrow, I intend to try and speak to him, because, you know, he's had such a tough few years with the threat of having the sport taken away from him, hanging over him, the threat of reclassification of his disability, rendering him unable to do his job, to do what he loves, to do what he earns a living from. But he has had the verdict that he will definitively be able to continue playing. And he told Russell Fuller of the BBC in a piece on their website that he feels like a completely new person since his future in the sport was assured. And it's wonderful to see them winning. So he'll go in the singles final tomorrow. Dida de Groot and Anik van Koot, they won the women's wheelchair doubles title. They defeated Yui Kamiji and Lucy Shuka 10-2 in the match tiebreak. That is their 13th Grand Slam doubles title together and their third Australian Open. And they will also face each other in the singles final tomorrow, which is just one of those little twists that I love.
I love that. And I always want to just be there, you know, to hear the conversation on the day, you know, when they get the switch over from the doubles.
I'm sure it's all
where they're planning stuff and then they're facing each other in the next match or vice versa.
Don't you think it's all probably annoyingly lovely?
Yeah, I mean, I remember we asked Alfie Hewitt that question at Queen's a few years ago, and he really...
He didn't like the question, did he?
Well, he really dismissed it, because he said, for us, it's not a big deal, because we're always in that situation of playing doubles partners and sharing a small locker room. It's not like the singles where, they might team up with a doubles player and it would be a really big deal if they met each other in the final. There's a smaller pool of wheelchair players, but, yeah.
Not like Ivan Dodig.
It must be a bit awkward.
And who was that? Who was his partner? I can't remember that.
Oh, it was Polishek, wasn't it? Yeah, horrendously awkward. The quad wheelchair doubles final was won by Andy Lapthorne, the Brit, and his American partner David Wagner. They beat Sam Schroeder and Niels Vink 10-7 in the match tiebreak. And Sam Schroeder will be the least popular man in Melbourne tomorrow. Spare a thought for Sam Schroeder. He's the guy that has to take on Dylan Alcott in his last ever professional tennis match on the Rod Laver Arena tomorrow in the quad wheelchair singles final. That match follows the Special K's onto court. Matt and I are electing to watch that on the telly tomorrow.
Correct.
Oh, I think that could be a cracking ticket. I might come over.
It's on Rod Laver Arena, but it is open to grounds pass holders, is our understanding.
Now we're talking.
Yes. I think you might have to prove a certain level of boorishness before they let you in the stadium for that, David. So
I'll have a couple of beers and I reckon I can do it.
Yeah. Two beers law would probably be granted entry. I think that is a wrap on your day 10 Australian Open tennis podcast. I'll just remind you of what's coming up in the evening session, Matt.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, it's a good women's singles lineup. I think you've got, you know, Barty really head and shoulders the best player, I would say, out of that group. But then you've also got Świątek, who's been there and done it. You've got Keys, who has this really high ceiling that we all know about, and we're sort of all wondering whether she can sort of find that level, keep that level up. And then you've got Collins, this incredible competitor. I think there's each one brings something to this lineup.
I very nearly went Keys in two in the newsletter predictions against Barty. Very nearly.
How many points would you have got for that, David?
I've no idea, but I was considering it.
See what he's done here. He didn't go
yeah,
for it.
Yeah, I see exactly what he's done. He's covered all bases.
He has. Yeah.
I felt if I did that, it would be wrong because I said that Barty would win the title, and that's why I ended up not doing it. See, I'm...
You do that all the time, though,
that's
David.
That's quite honourable, I think.
I've given you fake news, folks, by the way. It is Barty against Keys, of course, that is first up in the evening session tomorrow from 7:30 local time. That is, it's the Ash Barty slot, isn't it? I mean, first up, night session. And that's followed by Collins against Świątek. And then before that, it's the Special K's, not before 2:30. And then Dylan Alcott against Sam Schroeder. And first up on the Rod Laver Arena tomorrow is the women's doubles semi-final of Aoyama and Shibahara taking on the Brazilian-Kazakh pairing of Danilina and Haddad Maia. So that's what's going on tomorrow. On the second court is where you will find mixed legends doubles, if that takes your fancy. And then 1 p.m, it's women's doubles semi-final. Krejcikova-Siniakova, they won today. They go again tomorrow against Kudermetova and Mertens. And then men's doubles semi-final, Ebden Purcell against Rajiv Ram and Joe Salisbury. So that's tomorrow.
It's good doubles there on both of those matches.
Good doubles, yeah. And, of course, the winner gets the possibility of taking on the Special K's. And I suspect there's a sort of, you know, a pact among the doubles players, you know, that they just want them to be beaten by doubles players, I think, because Nick Kyrgios is going around doing interviews saying, you know, I believe singles players are better than any doubles players. I heard him say that in a Channel 9 interview, and Michael Venus did an interview today. It's all kicked off, hasn't it?
Yes, he called him a knob.
And one of the most beautiful things about that, I mean, obviously,
Michael Venus
it's
did.
Just... He did, yeah. Oh. He called him immature and a knob.
Yeah, something like a knob with the maturity of a 10-year-old or something.
Yeah, and the beauty is I don't think knob is an insult in Australia because knob has been misspelt in all the reporting of that interview. Everyone spelt it N-O-B, like knob of butter.
Right.
But as a connoisseur of the insult knob, it's K-N-O-B. And it's a cracker. Well done, Michael Venus. What was I saying? That's tomorrow. What about today? We have thank yous to give, don't we? We have our mascots. I've got Carter, David's got Darwin, Matt's got Gerald Darwin. The cat, Billie Jean has got Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our executive producers, Kyle Weingartner and Chris Albert Lee. I also want to thank again Carlos and his wonderful accent in our intro. He lives in Boston, but grew up in Puerto Rico.
What a voice he's got.
You all right there? Yeah, I didn't do it justice there at all, did I? He grew up an Agassi and Hingis fan, and now he likes Świątek, Raducanu, Nadal, Medvedev and Alcaraz. I'm imagining Carlos has very much enjoyed this Australian Open. And he says he's been listening to us for years and he's happy that he can now financially afford to support us and become a friend at intro level, which is just lovely. So thank you, Carlos. And if you want to become a friend at intro level, then you can do that. Become a friend. All the details are in our show notes, as are details of how to subscribe to our newsletter if you want to read the full exchange between me and Daniil Medvedev about how he is inadvertently a sort of excellent mimic of everybody around him. Then that'll be in the newsletter today, as well as Matt's brilliant stat and all the rest of the brilliant content that newsletter subscribers get. Matt, we have shout-outs.
We have Natalie Danziger from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Oh. Is that Cambridge, Massachusetts, as in Cambridge where Harvard University is? Just outside of Boston?
I believe it is.
If so, I have been there, and it is leafy and lovely.
Oh, I want to go. Mm. Right, Natalie, thanks so much for your support.
Thank you, Natalie.
We have Julie Igarashi Hickson.
Oh, hello.
Right, Julie.
Love that.
Who says her middle name is Japanese, but she lives in San Francisco.
Oh, I've been to San Francisco as well.
Oh, here we go. San Francisco. I've been everywhere. I'm Catherine. I go everywhere. I'm in Melbourne. It's so nice and hot. I sat there with my hot water bottle and my cup of tea this morning at 4 a.m. Anyway, move on.
It's so nice and hot, words which have not left Catherine's mouth this week. Can you complete the triple, Catherine? We have Ted Eckers from Minneapolis.
Oh, no, I haven't been to Minneapolis.
Well, I've been to Minneapolis. No, I haven't. Ted, lovely to have you as a friend.
I like the name Ted, though.
And Ted also has a bonus dog. No, a bonus shout-out for his dog, Gracie, a three-year-old lab beagle mix rescue.
Oh, love that. Wonderful. Oh, love that a lot.
Can you send us a picture, Ted? That would be lovely.
Yes, please send us a picture, Ted.
Please, Ted.
And that brings me to the last bit of business, which is to say hello to Charlie, our rescue beagle mascot, owned by Phil and Gina in Chicago, where I also haven't been. So, you know.
There's still time.
Not as well-travelled as those first two shout-outs suggested. Listen, folks, that's a wrap for tonight. It is 3:11 in the morning, Melbourne time. Matt's going to send a sheepish text to Simon Briggs and cancel their 10 a.m. tennis appointment. David's going to go and do evening things, because that's what time it is in Solihull, and I'm going to go to bed, and we will speak to you tomorrow after the women's semi-finals.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.